Good evening, everyone. Welcome once again to Voice of Reason Radio. You are joining us today on February 8th, 2019. And Rich, I keep telling everybody good evening because you and I start this at night. We say 6:30 and of course then it's like 7:30 because we spend so much time chatting in pre-show. But it is February 8th in the evening. But if you are listening to this in the morning or the afternoon, sorry if I confused you and you looked outside and went, what are you talking about? It's like sunshine out here. And now I kicked my desk. So if you heard a cymbal sound, that's me kicking that. I apologize, everybody. We're off to a rip-roaring start, as usual, Rich. How you doing?
I thought maybe you had decided to add some sound effects to the beginning of the show.
No, and that's our brother Andrew. He has a soundboard. He does that. I don't do that kind of stuff. I'm not that techno.
Well, it's 7:30 where you're at, but it's 9:30 where I'm at, so it's even more evening here than it is there.
So now that everybody's going, why have they spent the last 2 minutes talking about this? Welcome once again. We are grateful to have you with us. It has actually been a week since our last recording. We're trying to become consistent, but we're typically inconsistently consistent. So we are still thrilled to have you on board with us this week. Bear with us as we go through a hodgepodge of topics this week. There's just been a number of things that have been going on that Rich and I kind of bantered back and forth, and it was like, let's talk about all of them. So we're hoping that as we talk through some of these topics tonight, you guys will, you know, what we always say is we want you to look through a biblical lens, and we're going to challenge you to look at these topics not as a means to get ramped up or excited about anything, but just simply to go, okay, how can I look at this in the most Christian manner possible? So that's our hope tonight with these handful of topics we're going to talk about. But before we get into that, Rich, how are you doing this week, my brother?
Well, I've had, of course, as always, I'm better than I deserve, but I've had a relatively really pleasant week pain-wise and with my body and its issues this week, but completely off the rails.
Oh, no.
That has absolutely nothing to do with anything else.
Well, see, this is, you always do this to me.
For those of you that are so superstitious, it is currently, I'm looking at the thermometer on the clock sitting next to me, it is currently 66.6 degrees in my bedroom.
Dude, you know, like turn up the heat, turn it down, because my dispensationalist brethren are freaking out right now. I'm dispensationalist. I hold on to it kind of loosely, and I don't freak out when I see the numbers. But I know some people who look at those numbers and they're sweating right now. So, like, adjust it just a little bit, just to make our listeners a little more comfortable.
and I get what you're saying, but isn't it interesting though? Something like that can just kind of catch your attention and just kind of throw you for a loop
just a little bit. But with you and I, that's just kind of the norm. I mean, all it takes is one little thing and we're off on a rabbit trail of the worst sort. So speaking of I should say squirrel trail, because I'm getting to catch a ride with our good friend Gene Clyatt next month to go down to ShepCon, and I told Gene he has to sign a non-experimentation agreement for me to ride in his conveyance, because somebody shared an article where there was like squirrel mutation experimentation going on. So Gene Clyatt, the Shinar Squirrel on Twitter, I will not get in that car with you unless you guarantee I am getting no experimentations.
I saw that post. Was that for real, or was that one of those?
I think it was a legit article. Who knows anymore, because even satire is getting difficult to discern. It's become so insane. So who knows?
I remember something about they were glowing pink.
You know what? Anything's possible at this point. I don't know. I looked at the article. I saw that there was, you know, people were tagging poor Gene in it, and I'm like, oh man, this can't be good. Experimenting on squirrels. I mean, they're rabid enough. Those things have done enough damage to, like, antennas. Like, they stored thousands of pounds of nuts in giant microwave antennas and just, you know, chewed through power lines and stuff like that. And you want to start experimenting on them? Are you guys insane? What is wrong with you people? Weird news of the week. Sorry, I guess we're off on that tangent again. And we do not have a weird news article for the week because last week it was enough to cover for 2 weeks. So
that was. I think you just took care of that with the radioactive squirrels.
I kid you not. You and I shared that. We were like the first podcast to talk about it. And Carrie Atala, like within 24 to 48 hours, is sending us this article. And I'm like, Carrie, we already did it. And next thing I know, with it during the whole week, that man that wants to sue his parents for giving birth to him, it has been on every news feed I have come across. So we broke the news. We broke the weird news of the week before anybody else was really getting into it. So, Daryl, I thank you for that one.
I was going to say, wasn't that Daryl's fault? And at this point, the entire world can blame him for that.
Yes, I think so.
News article getting circulated.
Daryl, we thank you for helping us break it, but it's doubly your fault because now it's everywhere on the internet. So. I still don't know how you get permission of an unborn, a child. To get them to, they can't eat. I read that to my kids, and the first reaction I got from them was, "Well, how are they going to say yes or no? They can't speak coming out of the womb, much less in the womb." I'm like, "There's a fault in this guy's logic, and there are people that are have no issue with it." That's what scares me. All right. We're going. I told you that's enough to cover for 2 weeks. We're getting off topic again. Big surprise. A little bit ago, I just remembered, mentioned our brother Andrew Rappaport, who does all the sound effects on his show, because he just loves to play with buttons. He is has an upcoming conference in New Jersey, and if you are someone who has had to struggle with suffering throughout the course of your life and have questions about a good God and why he would allow suffering, you really want to check this out. It is the Sanctification Through Suffering Conference. It is going to be March 15th through the 16th of this year at the Chinese American Bible Church in Freehold, New Jersey. And we will put the conference link in our show notes so you can check it out. But let me just give you a little bit of information here. This is a wild swing. There was no good transition. Sorry, folks. Many people struggle with life, even Christians. However, for the Christians suffering with anxiety, depression, or physical issues, this is more than a struggle. It's an act of sanctification. Many Christians want to avoid suffering because no one wants to suffer. However, suffering is a means that God uses to make us more holy. We understand that many people do not want others to know that they suffer, and many more are ashamed of their struggle. This conference is designed to help you cope with your personal suffering and, in turn, disciple others through theirs. And at this conference, you will have speakers such as Justin Peters. And if you don't know anything about Justin Peters, this is a man who would, like you, Rich, have a great deal of understanding about what suffering is about. Frank Mullis, Joe Suazo. I hope I said that right, Joe. I apologize if I get it wrong. Colleen Sharp from the gals over at Theology Gals podcast. She's also speaking. And so you can, like I said, you can check this out on the Striving for Eternity website. You can register for the conference if you are anywhere near Freehold, New Jersey, and you have an opportunity to go. Would highly recommend you check it out. Some definite good discussions will be had. Topics include understanding God through our suffering, learning the tools that God uses to teach through struggle, and helping your loved ones cope with hardship. So those are some of the topics that they will be talking about. And definitely going to be a solid biblical conference, which we would not expect anything less from the folks at Striving for Eternity. So please go check that out. And again, we'll put that in the show notes. But sanctification through suffering, it's a biblical theme. Suffering happens. God ordains it. God allows for it. God uses it. And all you got to do is go to the things like the Book of Job, look at the Psalms, look at the writings of the apostles, the things that God has allowed in the lives of his children, he uses for his purposes. And so definitely check out this conference. So, Rich, before we actually try to dive into any kind of a topic tonight, any thoughts about how this conference or anything else going on?
Well, I was going to make a joke about being with Andrew in New Jersey causing you to suffer enough, but I won't do it. So.
Well, you know, having known Andrew, and he probably would agree. In and of itself is a unique level of suffering. I agree.
All kidding aside, I would love to be able to attend this conference myself. And I'm hoping, and I haven't seen where Andrew has mentioned it, I'm hoping they make the audios from this conference available to those of us out here in the wild blue yonder that can attend or can't travel to New Jersey. It does sound like a very edifying conference. It is a subject that I don't think enough is discussed when it comes to suffering. And Christians, I know there are some very godly men that have written several books on the subject, but I still think that when it comes to especially Christians with chronic conditions, I really think a lot of times they tend to get forgotten about, because honestly, most churches are not equipped to deal with members that have chronic conditions that, you know, will be impairing them for over long periods of time. You know, most churches have some type of visitation ministry to where if a member's in the hospital, they go and see about them, pray for them, you know, and you know, eventually, hopefully they get out of the hospital and they're back in church. But I think when it comes to disabled Christians or Christians with long-term chronic conditions, I don't think enough is mentioned or talked about. And I'm just going to throw my two cents in. And no, I don't have the answers, but I think there should be more. I think more should be being done or taught to encourage churches to have some sort of disability ministry to where they do minister to the members of their church that do suffer from chronic or long-term or disabled conditions, ones that can only make it to church once or twice a year, and they don't come because they don't want to. They come because they don't go because they literally are not physically able to attend. And, you know, that's just something that's always been on the back of my mind. I know from my own personal experience, my pastor will record his sermons, and they're sent to me, and I can actually listen and follow along as I'm able when I'm not, you know, up to being able to actually attend. So that's just kind of a few little thoughts that I had. I hope maybe that Andrew or Justin or one of these other gentlemen or Colleen might address when it comes to that is, from my own personal experience, from the time that I was disabled and became a Christian till now, from my own personal experience and from experiences I've heard from others, it seems to me, sadly, that the crippled sheep are often forgotten about when it comes to a lot of churches, especially depending on what part of the country you happen to live in. So That's all I've got on that, and I'll try to be a little more upbeat in the rest of the show.
You know what, brother? That's excellent, excellent stuff, and you're right. I think there's always a desire for everybody to want to minister to people who are suffering, but I don't think we stop and think about just how difficult some of that is, and really sometimes just how much that beats a person up emotionally and how that can and you know, just tear them down. And there's a lot more that I think sometimes we need to consider when it comes to the issues of suffering, more than just the physical issue. There's emotional and spiritual issues that we really do need to take into serious consideration. So I'm glad for your comments on that. I think that will help people a lot. So all right, so let's dive into this. It is our hodgepodge episode. That's what we're gonna call it tonight. Go ahead.
I've got a transition for the first one.
Uh-oh.
Twitter has caused you to suffer a bit the last couple of days.
Yeah, Twitter and then some. All right. So, yes. Well, actually, I think Twitter causes most of us to suffer most days. So, but this week in particular, it was pretty crazy indeed. All right. If you are not familiar with this, do yourself a favor. Like, pause this part of the story and wait, maybe fast forward it about 15 minutes and save yourself a migraine, because that's what this was and continues to be. If you have been on Twitter and Facebook and anywhere else, unfortunately, you've probably come across the supposed news article with regard to Pastor John MacArthur of Grace Community Church in California. And the reason this particular article, Rich, you and I talked about this, and it's basically the national, what the news report is like the level of National Enquirer reporting is basically what this was. The article that came out alleges that Charles Evers, who is the brother of Medgar Evers, who was killed during the Civil Rights era, is claiming that John MacArthur is lying when he says that he was with Mr. Evers and a Mr. Perkins and in this office when the events that led to Martin Luther King Jr.'s death occurred. So when he was murdered, MacArthur has said he is with these two men and ends up going up to the location where this occurred, actually is able to see the bathroom from where the shot was fired, etc. And he spoke about this on many occasions. And even when we've talked about previously, Rich, you and I talked about the statement on social justice in the gospel, Pastor MacArthur reiterated this account in a blog article on the issue because he wanted folks to understand he has understanding of what the Civil Rights era was about, what it cost people, the issues of racism, how deeply it ran in this nation. So it's not so much about an issue of like establishing street cred, but just allowing people to understand that he's not speaking from ignorance. That's the reason he has told this account on repeated occasions. So this particular article comes out, and I'm not going to share the article, nor am I going to give the link, because I really don't want to give these guys more website hits. But the article, basically, the writer of the article says that, I believe it was a she that wrote it, says that she interviewed Mr. Evers on the phone briefly, and he said that John MacArthur was nowhere near there and that he was in his car when he learned about it. And then gives an unnamed research partner who interviewed Mr. Evers, and the interview is recorded, and then the link to that recording is placed in the article, and it takes you to YouTube, and it's an audio recording. Excuse me. And so that was the big linchpin, that the audio recording indicates through the course of the interview that Charles Evers says, no, that didn't happen in that office. I was in my car when I got the call, which was a really strange thing for him to have said, because really didn't see a lot of cell phones back then. Cell phone coverage was not exactly an easy thing to have. So it was that in itself was kind of odd. But he says, well, you know, he doesn't know John MacArthur, and if John MacArthur needs to stop lying if he says he was with him, etc. So that's like the big linchpin of the article, that Charles Evers, who's a major name in this account given by Pastor MacArthur, says, I don't know him. He wasn't there with me. From there, the article talks about other supposed issues with regard to Pastor MacArthur's testimony. One is that this Mr. Perkins does not want to go on record with the reporter. Well, if you're writing a scandal attack gossip rag, I wouldn't go on record with you either. But they use that as well. He wouldn't go on record with us, so that's suspicious. And then they talk about what they call the forensic test of his testimony, which has to do with how could John MacArthur have been there? There was a massive police presence. How could he have stood on the toilet where James Earl Ray shot from? Because James Earl Ray never stood on that toilet. In fact, it's not in front of the window. And so all these things were presented as evidence that Pastor MacArthur is lying. And Fred Butler and has written an article with regards to many of the problems with this article. He is, you know, he is well associated with Grace to You, has done work for him. I will link that in the show notes. It addresses many of the problems with this article. But Rich, when this first came out, I walked into it like part way. I had no idea what was going on. And I see these comments threads on Twitter going on about the problems with what this article is talking about. And I'm like, what are you guys talking about? Wish I hadn't asked. and so what ends up happening is I'm sent the article, and the first thing that I notice is there is nothing that actually verifies that Charles Evers was in fact interviewed. I couldn't pick Charles Evers out of a group. I have no idea what he looks like, nor do I know anything he sounds like. But this link is put there, and it says, this is Charles Evers. It sounds like, from what has been put out so far, that may well be Mr. Evers. But there was nothing there was like no independent verification. That was the first thing that I noticed. And I started commenting. And I said, wait a minute. You've got a recording here that is ostensibly from Charles Evers, but there's nothing verifying this. How do we know this to be true? And the article never makes any claim of that.
Let me throw one out there.
Go ahead.
At you, because I haven't read any of it, to be honest with you. I've caught the headlines. I've caught the headlines as the you know, I kind of glimpse at them as I scroll through Twitter. But first, how long ago was it that Martin Luther King Jr. was shot?
You're talking 50, 60 years?
Okay. How many times since that has John MacArthur told the story of him being there?
Yeah, and that's one of the funny things about that article is that, as if that's some sort of evidence about how many times he's lied, they cited virtually every time he's told this account, which is a very consistent story. I find that interesting.
My question is, okay, it's been 50, 60 years. Why did it take 50 to 60 years for somebody to suddenly assume that John MacArthur was lying? What is their motivation behind even making this claim at this point? I mean, it's not logical.
Yeah.
It has no logic in it whatsoever. Even if the claim was true on the part of this, whoever they are, even if it was true, why wait 50 to 60 years to bring it out? Well, other than the simple fact that racial reconciliation and the woke movement is at the forefront of the discussion around most of social media today. John MacArthur has made several comments and talks in regards to all of this woke movement stuff within the church. This is nothing more than fodder for them to use to try to sling and throw at John MacArthur to bring attention to their own self or to their own website.
Well, and I think that's really what you're saying is kind of, I think most of us have concluded, is really the primary motivation is to take a shot at Pastor MacArthur. And this is not to say that anybody is above reproach. Pastor MacArthur is subject to as much examination as the rest of us. Just because he's Pastor John MacArthur doesn't mean that we don't examine what he has to say and see if it is true. We need to be, you know, able to say that, you know, when we have reasonable amount of certainty that a pastor said something is true, we should be able to, you know, say, put it to a test. And if somebody makes an allegation, I don't have a problem with an allegation, but let's make sure that what we're saying is true. What actually started to cause this whole thing to unravel was the issue of the interview itself. Somebody was like, the interviewer, that audio sounds very odd. It's very deep voice. It sounds somewhat modulated. But some folks were like, wait a minute, the voice doesn't sound entirely right, but I think that's Brandon House. And so the funny thing about the internet is that you often will encounter people who have the skills to take something and run and check into it. And sure enough, somebody actually went and pulled it, put the thing through the proper filters, and lo and behold, that's Brandon House's voice. It is clearly Brandon House. And if you're not familiar with Brandon House, that's probably a good thing. It, a little less headache if you don't have to worry about dealing with him. But Brandon House is the host of Worldview Weekend. He has a whole website. He is the individual that about a year ago now, maybe more, went after James White because James White, in an effort to educate Christians about what Muslims actually believe rather than having, caricatured versions of it, set up a talk where a Muslim imam, who is an Orthodox imam, told Christians, this is what we really believe. And then James went to this man's group of people, his congregation, and said, this is what Christians really believe. And they did not make it an issue of we have more in common than difference and that we all worship same God. No, they clearly said we believe entirely different things and we actually want the other one to come to our faith. You know, so that was, and it was one of those incidents that just kind of blew up on the internet several months after it happened. Pardon me, folks. But Brandon House was at the head of that. And he basically created a lynch mob for that.
Let me ask you a question, because, like I said, I haven't dug into all of this and read these links and everything, so I'm approaching this as someone that's not familiar with it, this particular issue about John MacArthur. So maybe my question would be a question that someone else out there has that has not jumped in the middle and listened to all this stuff. All right, the audio that was on YouTube, it was... Someone determined that was actually Brandon House speaking. Yep. Correct.
Correct.
All right. The one that published the video, the audio, and the article claimed that was Mr. Evans.
Well, you have two people in the interview. You have Charles Evers, and you have the interviewer who is not named. It is referred to as a research partner. So what it appears is that Mr. House attempted to conceal his own identity as the interviewer of Charles Evers. So that was the thing that really caused everything to start spinning weird, because it's like,
go ahead. Has anyone actually reached out to Mr. Evers and asked him if he was actually in that interview?
I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I actually tried. I went to the one place that I could find contact info for, and nobody's ever written back to me. So at present, we have to assume that the recording is legit, but the thing that makes it odd and the things that cause people to start looking into it more is that Brandon House disguised his own voice and kept his name out of this article as the interviewer. It made no sense. So,
doesn't that normally work the opposite way when you're doing an interview? Isn't it normally the one that gets interviewed, the one that wants their identity hidden, and the interviewer is the one that has their face and their voice and everything? I just find that's the weirdest interview context I believe I've ever heard.
It is. And the most positive spin I can give on this, and folks, bear with me, I want to be generous. The most positive spin I could potentially put on this is that Brandon House, knowing what a firebomb he is every time he opens his mouth, decided, I want the interview to be the more important thing, so I'm going to keep my name out of it. So the problem with that is the second you do that, you cast all kinds of doubt because you intentionally disguised your voice and hid yourself as being the interviewer, and it looks like you're covering something up. So you actually create a bigger problem than you solve by doing that. So even being generous and saying he actually had good intentions by trying to keep his name out of it so that people would listen to what Charles ever said, he actually created a bigger problem. So that's problem number one. What then pursued after that is that people started going and looking on the internet. Remember, they said that MacArthur naming Mr. Perkins as being one of the people in the, if you have to forgive me, I forget the gentleman's first name, as being one of the people present in the office when this call came in, they say, oh, he wouldn't go on record, so that's problematic. Well, there's video of MacArthur giving this account to a congregation of people, and Perkins is in the front row. He's there, and he's not disputing what MacArthur said. In fact, there's nowhere that it actually ever says that he does dispute it. In fact, the article tries to say, well, in one other account where Perkins speaks, he doesn't mention John MacArthur. why would he have? John MacArthur at that time was a relatively unknown person. He was helping minister to black youth in the schools in the South at the time. He was relatively unknown. He plays no part in the story. So the fact that Perkins heard MacArthur's testimony on this in the front row, has never disputed it, and would not go on record with a folks who are basically doing a hit piece, is no evidence at all. And then you have the testimony of Charles Evers, which from this recording is him saying, John MacArthur, I don't know him, and he needs to stop lying. Well, here's the problem. Charles Evers' testimony has changed about three or four times throughout the years. There are video recordings that were shared via the internet. And again, you can go to Fred Butler's article. We'll share it. He's got some of this stuff. The issue is that Charles Evers has given differing accounts. That doesn't mean he's lying. Okay. The man's, is getting older. We've said it was 50 or 60 years since this has happened. I think it's 50 because they had the MLK 50. Yes, it's been 50 years since this happened. It's an emotional event. It was a traumatic event. Can you remember things differently? Yes, you can. And try to think about what you remembered last week. And then you talk to your wife about what you did, and your wife says, "No, it was this way." Can your memory cause you issues with how events occur, especially when they're very traumatic or very emotional? Yes. So this is not to say that Charles Evers is lying. This is the saying that the person conducting the interview and the person writing the story did not do any kind of due diligence to look at alternative issues that would challenge the belief that Pastor MacArthur was telling a lie. If Pastor MacArthur was lying, and we actually had solid evidence of that, then yes, we would want him held accountable as a pastor who for years has used this account as a way to testify to the fact he understands the racial tensions of the era. But if you don't have anything that's definitive, when you can look at additional evidence and additional testimony and go, this could be a problem. How are we going to prove the case if the person we interview has differing stories? If one of the people who won't go on record has been spoken to by MacArthur as part of a body of listeners and has never challenged Pastor MacArthur's testimony? And there were other issues involved. And so the reason we bring this up is not to necessarily defend Pastor MacArthur, but to address the fact that you have a website that's claiming to have definitive proof that's not so definitive. And you have people who are Christians going, "Oh, the Pastor MacArthur and Grace to You, they need to answer to this. Why is this not being answered?" Well, because there's no reason to when the evidence exists that actually challenges what this hit piece was. And that's exactly what it is. It's a hit piece. And so, Rich, my contention, which actually got me yelled at by a very interesting individual on Twitter. Separate story for another time. My statement is for Christians to take into consideration, there is a vast difference between a person who is a gossip, scandal, attack, hit piece reporter, a la National Enquirer, and someone who actually cares about facts and research and wants to report the truth. Because all of this was information that was found within days of the article hitting the internet. And much of it, at least at a minimum, challenges the presuppositions of that article. And unfortunately, this thing has generated a lot of interest and is already causing, in my opinion, probably headaches for Pastor MacArthur, and it never should have gotten the attention it did because it simply lacks any due diligence. And if you're a Christian, you have a duty to do due diligence if you're going to challenge somebody like that.
Well, brother, it just, to me, proves the fact that something that you and I have discussed on the show and in private, people are, the vast majority of professing Christians are not Bereans. They do not take the time to think through a subject or examine it closer or dig deeper. They take it at face value a lot of times without it ever being truth or asking, you know, the who, what, when, why, or where's of a situation. And I know that our next topic is kind of completely in a different direction, but that same mentality applies to what occurred this week from the President of the United States. He made some comments in his State of the Union address, and people either applauded or were ready to drive stakes through his heart. I haven't seen any middle ground. Has there been one or the other?
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think as Christians, whether it's the Bible, a preacher, an article, or what the words that come out of a politician, we need to be Bereans and not just react on those words, but we need to step back and examine the context and everything else more closely. And I'll let you lead in from here and tell our listeners what the president said that led it to be part of tonight's show.
Yeah, absolutely. This is another one where I guess if you had buried yourself under a rock somewhere, maybe you would have spared yourself some strain. President Trump this last week had his State of the Union address, and really, by all accounts, I think it was a very good address. I think he said a lot. I myself have gotten to the point where I want to put blinders on when it comes to politics and the government, just because I want some sense of sanity left. But it's you kind of have to at least pay attention to some extent as to what's going on, so you at least have an operating knowledge of the world. So, Rich, I don't know about you, but I tasked myself with watching it that night so I could at least know what was going to be said by the president, given how contentious getting to the State of the Union had been. But he actually did something that I found really to be very bold for a president. You and I both talked about prior to his election and his getting elected as president, that we had serious concerns about his integrity and whether or not he would actually try to, you know, to honor the promises he made. I will confess, the jury's still a little bit out with him, but he has honored more of those promises than I thought he would. That doesn't mean I am a full-on Trump supporter, and he's not guaranteed my vote on the next election. I want to see what the next 2 years bring, okay? But it is extremely uncommon in this day and age for a conservative political personality to take a strong stance on the issue of abortion. Right, Rich?
I would agree with that.
Yeah, it is political suicide for a candidate for any political office to take a strong stance. It is equally political suicide to actually try to move forward and act on it, even if you said something. It is great when we see that happen, but as many people have pointed out, no matter how many times we have elected the Republicans to office, abortion still stands. There are people who are trying to fight that right now, which I find encouraging, but our hopes ought not hang on that, because the politicians have repeatedly proven to us that they can be very cowardly on this issue. So, sitting there listening to this, President Trump went right after New York and Virginia on their issues of late-term abortions, partial birth abortions. I was stunned. I was stunned. Now, I agree with a friend of mine on Facebook who said he would have preferred that he had gone after abortion as an issue when life is a conception. I agree with that individual wholeheartedly. I would have loved to have seen him do that. But the fact that he did this, not only in front of cameras, did it publicly, he did it at the State of the Union address. That was stunning to me. That is one of those areas you just don't see a lot of political backbone to see something like this. So, quoting from Fox News, and I'll put the article up, Trump addressing that said, quote, "We must build a culture that cherishes dignity and the sanctity of human life. All children, born and unborn, are made in the image, holy image of God. Every life is sacred, and every soul is a precious gift from heaven." He went on and quoted from the book of Jeremiah, saying, "As the Lord says in Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart." That, Rich, can you remember maybe since President Reagan, any political leader being willing to take that strong a stance, especially from a scriptural perspective?
I cannot remember, and I will agree to, as far as him even making those statements was bold.
Yeah,
that it was, you know, kind of against the grain. It wasn't the normal, you know, straddle the fence type of speech. But I have concerns with it beyond his words.
Yeah, that's absolutely valid to be concerned. Believe me, I just find this amazing that he would do it. That's what blew my mind.
Well, I know one headline I read, and I forget exactly who put it out, and there's been several making similar comments that his State of the Union address was nothing short of historic. Well, you know, he said a lot of good things.
Mm-hmm.
He said a lot of things that American evangelicals could get behind. He certainly made a speech that energized that political base. But in all honesty, I think it's nothing more than politics playing the political chip. But in this case, the political chip being the unborn. Because just, what was it, only a week prior to this, you have Virginia and New York basically trying to make abortion legal while the birth was happening.
Yep.
And then the president comes out with this, and we've got states trying to ban abortion, trying to pass heartbeat bills stating that an abortion cannot take place after a heartbeat is detected. We've got other states trying to follow New York and Virginia and trying to make abortion legal up until that, you know, seconds prior to birth. The problem is, looking at it deeper, the Supreme Court has not changed its opinion. Just today, I saw a headline that the Supreme Court shot down a bill presented by Louisiana. They tried to pass a law stating that for any abortion provider, they had to have admitting privileges to a local hospital. The Supreme Court overturned that and said that was unconstitutional.
Yeah.
So you're getting all these different mixed signals coming from all these different places. My honest opinion, I think they're trying to put out some abortion bills that are so horrific that the common American evangelical finds it so horrific and so disgusting that they're willing to accept anything short of that. And what I'm getting to is, I'm going to quote someone, I'm not going to give their name, but this is a retired pastor, and I think this is the mindset that too many people have. We're talking about how to put a stop to this runaway abortion thing, and almost anything will be an improvement. To me, that's the problem.
Yeah.
They're willing to compromise on, you know, whatever term abortion, as long as it's not after, you know, whatever trimester or the third trimester or, you know, right up to birth. People see these horrific images and words coming out of these politicians about abortion and, you know, we're going to pass a law to allow abortion in the ninth month, and people overreact, and then they backtrack and settle for abortion at 3 months, 4 months, or whatever the case may be, thinking that they've won a victory. When I believe, truthfully believe, that the abortion providers are doing all of this just to make sure that abortion remains legal at some stage, not intending for all this other stuff to really, truly remain. I think it's a, if you want to call it a plot, you can call it a plot. And that's my honest opinion. And whether Trump upholds his views that he presented during that State of the Union address remains to be seen. I put out the other day, and a few people actually agreed with me, that when it comes to an elected federal politician, you have to kind of take what they say with a grain of salt. Yep. It's not what they say, it's what they do. And
absolutely,
you know, when it comes to President Trump, his powers are limited. He can, you know, invoke certain other politicians to maybe try to write a law and get this passed or get that passed. And he can appoint Supreme Court justices. But since Reagan, how many times have we had majority of Republicans holding the House and the Senate and the presidential seat, and nothing has changed? We're starting, the third year of Trump's presidency?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Where is the defunding of Planned Parenthood that was promised? There are things that the government can do that would strictly limit abortion, that would take away the taxpayer money providing to these people that are, you know, doing these abortions. But I don't see the fruit of the words that he expressed. And I have to say that I do agree with you that Trump has seemed to try to honor the promises he made in the, you know, leading up to the election. I personally think that in some ways he is a good president when it comes to the economy and certain international issues. I agree with him. I think he's done a great job. Honestly, I still don't trust him. When I hear things come out of his mouth, I have to kind of gauge it just like I would any other politician.
Yeah.
Okay, he said this, but what has been his track record, and will anything actually be accomplished by what he has said? But, you know, American evangelicals have been applauding and, you know, thinking he's the greatest president since Reagan. The thing that you just read when he was talking about babies being in the holy image of God, yes, that's great, and I agree with it. I'm not convinced he understands what that means, because I've read and seen too much about some of these quote-unquote spiritual advisors he has around them, and I have no confidence in most of them even understanding Christianity, much less being truly saved themselves. There was a picture that went out this week of several people around him praying before he went out to make his speech. And I'm yet to find out. I've asked the question several times, but one of them had painted fingernails. And, you know, yeah. I'm assuming that was a woman. But, you know, as people applaud and cheer President Trump for his stance on abortion, or at least the words that he said against abortion, where does he stand when it comes to other biblical issues such as homosexuality and the pornography problem in this country? I've heard absolutely crickets when it comes to that.
Right. And I think a lot of what you said is absolutely true. So that would be the first part of what we want to address. Is it is fantastic to hear him make these statements, and they are very bold statements, and they are not characteristic for what we see. You pointed it out yourself. Despite all their usually weak-kneed promises, most politicians won't touch it with a 10-foot pole. So whether he does or not, that's going to be the test of what he said. But again, we would both agree, very bold statement, and took a biblical stance on what it is, and called on, you know, the Congress to pass a law, as he said, to defend the dignity of every person. I'm asking Congress to pass legislation to prohibit late-term abortion of children who can feel pain in the mother's womb. Let us work together to build a culture that cherishes innocent life. I agree with you, Rich. I think the idea that we can just kind of, well, we'll start here and work our way back and we'll eventually eliminate, I think that's a pipe dream. And in the meantime, many children die as a result. I think we need to recognize what it is. It's murder, and we need to put that barbaric practice to end. I don't care what stage of development you're talking about. Abortion is a murder of an innocent human life. And so, yes, you're right. Very politically motivated in terms of why he's specifically addressed those, because, as he had noted in the State of the Union, he addressed New York. He addressed Virginia. So he targeted them specifically because they were the ones in the news, and that's what he used as the linchpin to make this call. The flip side of this issue, the thing that I found really interesting and what got me in some trouble on Facebook yesterday, was prior to this portion of the speech, President Trump acknowledged that, you know, he was pointing out the diversity in the workforce, that many minorities, which should have resonated with many social justice folks, many more minorities are now in the workplace, and they're getting paying jobs, and they're providing for their families. And he acknowledged that many, even more women than in the past, were in the workplace, which could be a good or bad thing depending on your perspective. I would not necessarily argue it was a great thing. That's going to get me in trouble. but then turns around and acknowledges that there are more women in Congress than it ever, than in any other point in history. And a sea of Democrat women who were all dressed in white in honor of the women's suffragette movement jumped up and down, danced in the aisles, high-fived each other, and went berserk. I mean, they loved it. They loved being able to applaud that they had grown in Congress. And then we move forward to this issue where he makes this, just like I said, I give the man credit for having backbone to do this in a State of the Union address in hostile territory. He speaks of the fact that life must be protected, and that camera went to that same sea of women with white clothing, and not a one of them, not one, applauded, smiled, acknowledged that what he said in any way was a good thing. In fact, if you could have killed with a look, President Trump would have been assassinated 100 times over, because the looks that came from those women was staggering. And as I would contend, if you are willing to stand in Congress and applaud yourself for being, having achieved this high honor and broken this glass ceiling in such a way that you, more women are in Congress than ever before, but then when somebody calls on you to exercise that power to protect innocent life, you scowl and show nothing but contempt and hatred for the person doing it, you are standing on a pile of dead baby bodies to maintain that power. And that is what I found just utterly astounding to watch.
As far as you know, Chris, were any Republican women amongst the crowd of those dressed in white?
To my knowledge, I do not believe so, because when you saw the Republicans standing and applauding, there were women amongst them, and they weren't dressed in white. I believe this was a Democrat sea of bodies that was doing this.
Well, I found the hypocrisy troubling, because whether you want to hear this or not, you can look it up. It's historically accurate. It was the Democrats that supported slavery, and it's always been the Democrats that supported abortion. So you take what you want from that.
Well, and that's the thing, is that you are dealing with people. And what's scary is that the Democrat Party is really being overtaken by utter leftists. I mean, just flat out racially motivated, hateful, power hungry leftists. That's just what it is. And I'll tell you right now, Ms. Ocasio-Cortez, if she could have killed President Trump with her looks, she would have. That woman, I never seen so much hatred in a person's eyes. And I've dealt with a lot of people who have shown me anger and hatred in my lifetime, by the glare and the words and the actions, that woman, I just never seen so much utter contempt and hatred as I saw in Ocasio-Cortez and the faces around her. And
they had the cop eyes down pat.
Oh, I'm telling you, man, it was horrifying. It was horrifying. And what's so terrible about this is you have to remember, and this is what got me in trouble because I said this. This is a party who supposedly cares about the disenfranchised, cares about the people who are oppressed, cares about the people who are in need. But they do so at the utter expense of the lives of babies in the womb. And they will kill those children even up to the point of birth. And it was the Virginia governor who they're all worried about his blackface stupid high school photo. But they're also trying to make that the issue is because this is the man that said, well, if a baby survived the abortion and was born alive, he'd let the baby lay there while a discussion happened. That's what they're trying to hide. This man was talking about infanticide. And they don't want that to be part of the discussion. And then another bill was submitted. And the woman who submitted, I forget which state it is, one of the Carolinas maybe. And the gals asked if that would include, up to the point of where the baby was born. And she says, yes, my bill would cover that. She flat out said it. They're talking infanticide. They're actually talking about murdering the babies outside the womb now. And these women could not be so much as lift a finger in support of what the president was saying. And it's not just the women. Chuck Schumer, my word, the man looked like he was giggling.
That's why I say what I said earlier is one of the reasons you kind of substantiated my hypothesis. They're trying to make it so extreme and push these, post-birth abortions and right up to birth abortions. They're trying to make it so extreme that everyone's just taken back and horrified to the point that they're willing to go back and accept the old status quo, of 6 months earlier or, all these other different stages. I think they're so worried about abortion being overturned and banned in this country that they're trying to create such a storm that people will, be just like that comment I read that, anything's better than this. And that's the problem. That can't be the mentality we have as a Christian society or what's left of us or as Christians, that can't be something we're willing to compromise on.
Yeah.
Abortion is wrong at any given stage, just like you said. As Christians, we should be settling for nothing less than a complete ban on abortions. We should not be happy to compromise, or as this gentleman said, at least something's better than nothing. No, yeah. That's not going to fly. The only thing that would fly would be a complete ban on abortions. And it's in my honest opinion, this country will never completely ban abortions.
No, there's too much money to be made. There's too much political capital to be made in the death of babies. That's just all there is to it. And what's terrifying to me, Rich, is, in all our discussions previously about the issue of social justice, those who are arguing for social justice, it's like they have intentionally put blinders on when it comes to this issue, because despite President Trump wanting to protect, the innocent lives of these children, they would rather have you vote for the women in white who will not applaud for saving the lives of babies because, well, the government needs to solve these social justice problems and we can't be one-issue voters, so babies' lives aren't as important as social justice. And that's what's horrifying to me because, as many people have pointed out, you want to talk about disparity. You want to talk about disproportionate numbers. The black community is most adversely affected by abortion. The African-American children in the womb die at much greater rates because of abortion than any other ethnic group. But yet these individuals who are social justice leaders would rather see Trump fail so that their social justice agenda can be approved and let babies continue to die. That tells me, you know, you mentioned the hypocrisy. That hypocrisy is massive, especially when you don't want to protect the most innocent. And for Christians, you're absolutely right, Rich. For Christians, this is a non-negotiable issue. We don't endorse murderers. Pure and simple. We don't endorse murderers for political office. You know, people try to say, well, you don't want to like an abortion. You don't like abortion, don't have one. That's nonsense. I don't want people murdering my neighbors either. I don't want people murdering little kids in the park down the street. This is murder we're talking about. And as Christians, this should matter to us more than almost any other political issue. But we need to do something more. You're absolutely right, Rich. The proof will be in the pudding whether anything happens out of this. I'm with you. I don't think anything will happen. It certainly buys President Trump some political capital. And credit where credit is due. The man did something I have never seen in my lifetime, sans maybe Ronald Reagan, willing to make that kind of stance. Will he do anything with it? Doubtful. He can't do anything with it unless Congress acts. Unlikely.
Well, one thing's,
go ahead.
Well, one thing's for sure. He flipped the news narrative for a couple of weeks.
Yep, he did.
And why did he do that? Or why did the Democrats time their, you know, late-term abortion bills? Why did they time those like they did? I may be suspicious by nature, but when it comes to the government, my trust is waning to where it's little to none when it comes to some of these issues, because there's always, always another agenda behind everything that they do.
Yeah.
And I hold that, and I mean that for Republicans and Democrats. There's always something behind everything they say and everything they do. And more times than not, it always comes back to money and power.
Yep.
And I can't remember the exact statistic, but isn't it something like 62 or 64% of all abortions are performed on black unborn babies?
Right.
My question is, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't know the exact number, but that sounds probably correct.
My question is why does the NAACP, who is supposed to be a voice that stands and fights for the rights of black citizens, why do they endorse abortion? Why do they endorse these Democratic candidates that also support abortion? That's something that I still cannot understand.
Well, and I think a lot of that goes back to the leftist policies that create this environment. You go back to Marx, you go back to the various communist and socialist writings. One of the ways that you gain the favor of a culture is you let them pursue their sexual lust at an unrestrained pace. Well, the only way you're gonna get, you know, people to not fear the results of acting on their sexual lust, which is pregnancy, is you make it possible for those babies to be killed so people can pursue their sexual desires unrestrained, and then you become Santa Claus. You say sexual perversion of all kinds is the ultimate freedom. And so we want abortion so we can have, you can have sexual lust fulfillment at any given time, and then you trust a government that says what you do and what you pursue is up to you. And it's giving up any sense of being able to be restrained and moral and under the control, having your passions under control. You get to pursue whatever you want. And if you find people in society that support you in that, you're going to follow them. And so every leftist organization, they want a total sexual autonomy for the people that follow them, because guess what? they can point to you and me and to every person who's a Christian and say, you're what's wrong with the world. You absolutist you. You're putting people under your moral thumb, and they don't like that. They'll follow us because we'll give them whatever they want. But you're the problem. You're trying to restrain them. You're trying to keep them from pursuing the lives that they want. And that's where we're seeing this problem occur. It is Marxism 101. Give the people their lusts and their appetites to their fill, and they will follow you everywhere. And that's why they won't endorse restraining abortion, because if you restrain abortion, then people can't pursue their sexual perversions to their fullest.
And you got it absolutely right. The biggest problem in this country, besides sin, to be more specific, is the sin of sexual immorality. That has caused more problems in this country. That's the cause of the high divorce rate. That's the cause of men and women being addicted to pornography. Politicians all the way down to kids in junior high school. And people do not want to have to take the responsibility of their actions. They want a quick and easy way out. They want other people to tell them that their sin is okay, that it's not their fault, that they ought to be entitled to live any way they want to, that they ought to be there, that they are entitled to sleep with anybody that they want to as often as they want to, whether married or not, because marriage as an institution has been destroyed in this country, not in the last couple of years, but it started getting destroyed decades ago when the divorce rate started climbing and climbing and climbing. You've got sexual immorality all over the internet, almost every television show, movies, condones and actually promotes sex outside of marriage in every way, form, and fashion. And that's the heart of the issue, is abortion is not the problem. The problem is sexual immorality. And that's one reason I don't think abortion will ever be banned in this country, because people will not give up their free love, free sex thing that started in the movement in the 60s.
Yeah.
We've lost the church. Well, not the church, not the true bride of Christ, but American evangelicalism lost that culture war decades ago.
Yeah. And so that's the whole, we had a third topic we were going to try and do, but I think these two have kind of eaten up a lot of our time. So I want to go ahead and finish up for everybody. Want to honor your time and thank you for listening. Why are we addressing these? Well, the issue of the news article that was a scandal rag that attacked an elder in a church, the issue of abortion in this country, these are biblical issues. And as Christians, we have a responsibility to approach these issues from the most biblical means possible. And so when we said earlier on the issue with Pastor MacArthur in that article, and by the way, I kept saying Mr. Perkins, it was John Perkins and Charles Evers that he was with. I apologize for forgetting the first name. That issue is what you and I have talked about so many times. Due diligence. Don't just believe something because it's in print. Study it. Figure it out. Don't respond in a visceral manner and go, wow, this needs to be addressed and this needs to be answered for. Make sure that what you're reading is legit. You know, don't be like the young lady there's a video out there of a young lady who tells two people who are wearing President Trump's red hats that they need to embrace feelings and reject logic, because feelings are real and it's the only thing that's real in this world. Yeah, and they're trying to encourage her. Don't just embrace what the mainstream media shares. Do some research. As Christians, that's what we should do. We should do the research. Let's make sure that, you know, if a story sounds bad, let's do a little bit of legwork. Let's make sure it's what's being said is true. Because if not, and we're believing a lie against an elder, the Bible has something to say about that. We're not to take a report against an elder without two or three witnesses. And that has to be investigated. It has to be treated in the same manner that we would take a person in sin to the church, there's a process. We don't just believe it because somebody wrote about it. And it's not to defend Pastor MacArthur, but it certainly seems like that this reporter and Brandon House did terrible, terrible job of even trying to make a logical case. They just got one answer they wanted and they ran with it. The issue with regard to abortion, it's great when you hear a political leader, especially a president, step up and say, we want to defend life, and he quotes the Bible in doing it. That's fantastic. And it is equally heinous to watch people stand there and applaud themselves for gaining power, but then having nothing but visceral hatred for someone who says we should protect life. It can fire you up. It can get you excited. It can get you want to get involved. But as Rich has said, and I agree with him, politics isn't going to be the solution to this. The politicians are a cowardly lot. They have one real desire: get in power, stay in power. We've seen that with both parties. It sounds great to be able to say, well, at least we're gaining some kind of movement. Sure, that sounds great on the surface, but babies are still dying, and these organizations are still being funded, and now we've got people wanting to argue for even greater ability to kill children. It's not working to depend upon the politicians to do the job, as we have argued so many times. The issue, I'll say what Paul, I think it's Paul Tripp that says, the heart of the matter is the matter of the heart. It's the issue of the heart. We are sin-sick nation and culture. The only answer to this issue is Christians being galvanized, not necessarily in the voting booths or in the or out on the marches, but in their churches, going into their communities, preaching the gospel, and helping those who need help, and offering that genuine alternative to death, and that is life, and let us help you. And let us call upon you not to murder your child. The church needs to be engaged. We can't just say the political battle is enough. It's great to hear it, how exciting, how awesome, and how wicked those Democrats are. Yes, we can talk about that. But that doesn't solve the problem of babies dying every single day at the tune of 3,000 plus or more. The gospel changes hearts. The gospel saves people out of those environments. The gospel saves nurses who work in those facilities. The gospel saves technicians. The gospel saves wicked, evil abortion doctors. The gospel saves women who want to murder their children. Guess what? You change those hearts and they don't want to kill babies anymore. This is a sin issue. It is a gospel issue. If there's anything that we want to look at from a political perspective that's a gospel issue, it's the abortion issue. Because babies are being murdered. So yes, let's give the president a thumbs up and say thank you for saying that. But hold his feet to the fire if you expect anything to be done. I agree with Rich. I'm not holding my breath. But do more than that. Do more than worry about contributing to right to life or marching in the National Right to Life campaign march in Washington, D.C., or standing out and holding up protest signs to save babies' lives. Preach the gospel in your communities. Raise your families with the gospel, because your children are growing up in an environment where sexual promiscuity is the greatest freedom, and you have to teach them it is a heinous sin against God. And if they do commit that sin, they can still be forgiven in Christ. It is not the unforgivable sin, but if they do have the product of that sexual union, it is their responsibility in the eyes of God to care for that child or to give it to someone who can. We want to raise a generation of pro-life children who care about children all the way through from the beginning of their life to the end. And we do that because we teach them what the Word of God says about it. So these are gospel issues. And as Christians, we want you to look at this from a biblical perspective. Don't just look at it from the political. Don't just look at it from the outrage culture. Don't just look at it because it was on the internet and think it's true. Study it, understand it, preach the gospel, examine the truth, find out if it is true, do something about it. Rich, any last thoughts?
Well, I'll just, the only thing I really can add to what you've already said, which was absolutely excellent, I agree with everything you just said. If you truly want to put an end to abortion and sexual immorality, get up off your butt, get out of your house, go to the streets, go to the malls, go to the shopping centers, the gas stations, hand someone a tract, leave a tract, share the gospel with your neighbors, but most importantly, share the gospel with your wife and your children or your husband, depending on whichever case, if you have an unsaved spouse, but share the gospel. Because it truly is the only answer. And yes, it can make a difference. I've heard too many professing Christians say that the gospel is not enough. Well, you're wrong. The gospel is more than enough.
Amen.
And I'll just add to this, I'm going to hijack the first part of next week's show because this is a subject that's kind of hit a pet peeve with me. I'm going to ask you as a listener, please, 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 send us a message, whether it be via email, Facebook, or Twitter. I want to know your opinions on public schools teaching Bible classes. If you're for it, please tell me why. If you're against it, please tell me why, because that's the subject I would like to address on the first part of our next show. So if you would, please, I'd really, really, truly want your feedback. I want to see where get a gauge of where people stand on this. I have my own opinions, and Chris does too, but I want to hear from you, the listener, and most likely we'll use some of the feedback that we get on this. But in the meantime, whatever you do, please make it a point to share the gospel this week at least once a day.
Amen. Amen. Okay, folks, if you want to respond to Rich's question, you can do it a couple of ways. First and foremost, you can go to our website, slavetotheking.com, and that has all of our contact information, social media, email, etc. Or if you're just wanting to punch out an email real quick, you can write us at voiceofreasonradio@gmail.com and send us your thoughts on the Bible being taught in public schools, good or bad. You know, make your case. We're not going to attack you if we disagree with you. But if you have any thoughts on that, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions about tonight's program, any conundrums, snarks, anything like that, you're more than welcome to contact us that way as well. We always welcome it. And I will put it up front now. If you're going to be mean, nasty, accusatory, name-calling, or especially if you use foul language, don't expect a response. If you're just going to be antagonistic, we're not going to engage you. We will be happy to engage legitimate questions and concerns, but if you're just calling to be accusatory and snarky, we'll look at it and we will file it where it belongs. So that said, thank you for being with us this week. We went a little bit long. We went about an hour and 17 minutes. Not quite like an Uber-sized program, but we did go beyond our normal hour. We thank you for your patience. Thank you for joining us. And if you learn from this program, if anything in here is helpful to you, we would ask you to consider sharing it with other people. Not that we want a massive audience, because I don't think the Lord wants us to have a massive audience, because it would go right to my head. but we just want to be a blessing to anyone that was willing to give the time to listen to it. So we thank you. We appreciate you. And we look forward to seeing you next time. God bless. Good night. We'll see you then.